I'd like to call the meeting to order, the Early Childhood Finance and Policy Committee. We have a very full agenda today, members, so we're going to get started here and hope to move through it. First of all, I need someone to approve the minutes, move approval.
Madam Chair, so move the minutes of March 9th, 2010.
Thank you, Representative Ward. Representative Ward moves the approval of the minutes for March 9th. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails and the minutes for March 9th are approved. Members, I know we also have competing committees going on. We remember we're going to get those couple of bills. We got the paperwork. We're going to get them passed out of the committee as our first task. And then we have the funders here to talk about their agenda. The first bill is House File 3088. As you might remember, that's the Hayden bill. We had testimony on Tuesday about that. I move that House File 3088 be recommended to pass and placed on the general register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The bill is passed. And now we have the Abler bill. Remember, Representative Abler was here talking about that's the licensing bill. I move that House File 3239 be recommended to pass and placed on the general register. I think there is an amendment. Representative Greiling, do you have the amendment? An amendment, the A3 amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll move the A3 amendment while I'm looking for it. And members, this is the bill that I had yesterday for the risk reduction plan and the new definition for a mistake that could happen at a child care facility.
Is there any discussion on the amendment? And we did hear that fully again on Tuesday. Hearing none, those in favor of House File 3239. We need to approve the amendment. Okay. So let's see. Those in favor of the A3 amendment say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is passed. Okay. Next, we will renew the motion that House File 3239 as amended be recommended to pass and placed on the general register. All those in favor of that, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Bill is passed. Thank you, members. That is the official bill moving business, which we would have liked to have done on Tuesday. We have a special presentation today. We have the funders, and they will, when I say the funders, we've had questions from the members. Who are the funders? So with that, we will have clarification. We have the president of the Minneapolis Foundation to start off the presentations. Welcome to the committee. If you can state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and good afternoon, members. I'm Sandy Vargas. I am the president and CEO of the Minneapolis Foundation. And I really thank you for the opportunity to testify this afternoon on behalf of the School Readiness Funders Coalition. And I just want to enumerate the members of the coalition, and hopefully I also want to state, as I get started here, you have this agenda to achieve early learning. Hopefully the members and have this learning readiness by 2020. So let me first start by saying that this has been a coalition of funders interested in early childhood education and care in the state of Minnesota, and some work that we have done in nonpartisan fashion, but we feel is very, very important. The coalition members are the Blandon Foundation, the Greater Twin Cities United Way, Grotto Foundation, McKnight Foundation, the Minneapolis Foundation, Sheltering Arms Foundation, Social Venture Partners, and the Women's Foundation of Minnesota. So we cover a broad territory across the state. And the first question that might be asked is, why are we doing this work? Why are the funders doing this work? Well, first of all, we care deeply about helping our state to build a system that delivers successful results and outcomes for all children in the state of Minnesota. We also think that we can bring a unique perspective. We can bring a neutral place for discussion, and so we've decided to do this work together. We also have an interest in aligning our grant making and investments with a clear action plan, with accountability, and with outcomes. We've had an extensive process, and I'd just like to enumerate that process. We've had an extensive review of research of early childhood care and education in Minnesota, and this has been produced and looked at all of the literature and has reviewed what we've got here in Minnesota since 2000. We've also had numerous group discussions, and there have been 175 interviews that have been done with individuals and with key constituents. We've also, in the process, identified a long list of critical early childhood care and education needs, and that we've determined that before addressing these needs, Minnesota would benefit by developing a framework within which to base all of the early childhood and care decisions. So let me, so I've talked now about why we're doing the work, what process we've used. Let me summarize three key elements to what we believe is a successful state system. We believe that we need leadership, we need accountability, and we need funding. So let me take the first element of leadership. In our report, what we are recommending is the creation of a cabinet-level agency focused on early care and education for children. We have articulated the need for an office, the Minnesota office, or a state agency with the same focus and role. And this is, again, to get alignment with all of the dollars that are spent to make sure that the decisions are in alignment with accountability and the outcomes that we would like to see. This office would be accountable for ensuring the quality of the early childhood system and assessing state progress towards the 2020 goal of all children being ready for kindergarten. And we believe, or we're recommending that this office is operational by fiscal year 2012. The second element is that of state accountability. And what we're recommending here is establishment of a statewide report card. This report card provides the accountability framework for early childhood care and education in Minnesota. This report card would annually report the progress of all levels of the state's system, and it would be a guide in decision making for funding, regulatory policies, and for training and development. The third part of this, the element of this plan, is provider accountability. And this is talking about expansion of QRIS, the Quality Rating and Improvement System. And one of the recommendations that we emphasize in the report is that Minnesota needs a consistent quality rating and improvement system. What are we measuring against as we think about a QRIS system with meeting standards that are aligned with results? In other words, how will children be ready for kindergarten? What are the standards that have to be met in order to have the kids ready, and how do we make sure that that's happening? And we're also, because parents are so important in this whole picture, we're also recommending that we build on the strengths of parent-aware QRIS. The fourth element of this plan is a systemic accountability, and this is to expand screening and assessment of children. And our recommendation here states that all Minnesota children, starting at age 3, would be assessed for progress towards school readiness by 2020, with a milestone goal of screening and assessment of 50% of the children by year 2015. And again, we want to make sure that we're looking at benchmarks along the way so that we aren't just at, let's say, 10% now of children being assessed and expecting that that's going to happen without a systematic framework in place. So that is the systematic or systemic accountability. Let me talk and summarize funding, and you will see and hopefully have this one-page timeline. And as you look across it, you will see that we've got the establishment of the Office of Early Learning in that next legislative biennium. We've got the expansion of QIRS statewide moving forward, the establishment of a report card, expanding assessments, and then modest increases in the dollars that would go towards this effort. But you also see in the 2015-2016 legislative biennium that we would really focus on a target of 50% of all children being assessed. And again, it moves on through the end of the period or the decade, ending with 2019 and 2020, where we have the report card published on a regular basis. We have expanded assessments, and as we go forward, increases and a large increase in state funding on an annual basis. That is the summary of the report, and if there are questions, I am here, but also other coalition members are here, and we'd love to entertain them. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Well, thank you. Thank you for explaining the process and for being here and for laying out a 10-year vision. It's part of how we're going to get all kids ready for by 2020 is starting to take shape, and I think this is a big part of starting the conversation. Next, we have Todd Otis. If you would like to state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hi, I'm Todd Otis, president of Ready for K, which is an early childhood policy and advocacy organization. I just want to say a few things. First of all, I think it's terribly exciting and meaningful that these foundations, along with the United Way, have come together to formulate this kind of an agenda. It's huge. It's very significant. Not only is it good because the ideas are valuable and solid, but it's also representative of a longer-term commitment to moving the needle on this issue. So I just salute the people who have come together to do this and act in a unified way. Just want to say a few things about the actual content of the proposals, and you'll be hearing more about the bills specifically from the testifiers who follow. First of all, the issue of identifying leadership as a need is hugely important. I completely agree with the need for creating a mechanism within the state, whether it's an office or a department, which is responsible for the well-being of our kids and their school readiness. It's a good idea. We want to support that enthusiastically. I also want to just acknowledge that leadership has also been coming from you. The fact that last session you didn't cut early childhood in the face of a massive deficit, and the fact that you're as supportive as you are in this session is very significant. But we do need leadership as well within the administration. So that's a really important priority. Accountability is crucial. We can't expect to spend more money if we can't expect to get better results. So we think that the measures that are being proposed here make total sense. The QRIS is an idea which we've been trying to support for years, and we think hopeful learning is coming out of what's going on with the Early Learning Foundation. I think the expansion of screening and of assessments is huge. Ideally, we're going to be in a place where every child is screened early, and where they do need referrals, they get it, and every child will be assessed when they come into kindergarten. And that knowledge that there will be that assessment will enable parents and providers to know, well, what does it take to get them ready for K? So the recommendation by the funders to make that universal over time is strategically extremely valuable, and we really support that. The concept of a report card is something which, in a different way, we've been trying to support in work with the so-called BUILD initiative, which is systems building. And we've done some work identifying the outcomes and indicators with the Wilder Foundation, which I think will be helpful to the Early Childhood Advisory Council of the governors. So that's an excellent idea as well. Bottom line, this is a team effort. Moving the numbers from 50% to 100% is a tough job, and it's going to take time, effort, and money. This collaboration of foundations in the United Way is a major step. On the way over, I was thinking today, well, what's it like? It's almost like signing Joe Maurer. I think maybe it is signing Joe Maurer in terms of our team of people trying to move the needle. You've been hugely important. This is an incredibly important and potent group that's moving the needle. I do want to briefly mention other people we've been working with at Ready for K, formulating what we call Minnesota's Future, which is a five-part proposal which is completely compatible with what the funders have come up with and are presenting today. And just briefly, they are Child Care Works, Minnesota Association for the Education of Young Children, Minnesota School Age Care Alliance, Minnesota Association of Family and Early Education, Minnesota Child Care Association, Minnesota Child Care Resource and Referral Network, Minnesota Coalition for Targeted Home Visiting, Minnesota Community Ed Association, Minnesota Head Start Association are the allies we've been working with. But I think you, the Governor's Council, the MELF, and now this really hopeful collaboration of funders is going to be what makes the difference.
Great. Well, thank you. Well, I think we're talking about ballpark analogies. Next year, we want to hit one out of the park, right? Or a home run, because Representative Greiling has been needling us. I have to think of a baseball term to come up with a vision. And really, the Minnesota Miracle, the early ed vision. And I think when you combine, you look at the funders and the allies, and you put those two together, I think, and I'm hoping, Representative Greiling, that this is going to be the magic formula that gets us into the World Series, or however we want to say that. And I think that would work. But that's what we appreciate, you being here and teeing this up. And I think part of, for us at the legislature, it's having the conversation, moving things forward in pretty difficult environment this year, but and possibly next year, but being able to have those conversations and vision out there. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and all of the members around the table. Thank you very much for your consideration.
You're welcome. Next, we will have Representative Nornes's bill, House File 3471. What we're going to do, members, we'll have House Representative Nornes, then Representative Slawik. We'll have to see who's going to chair during that part. Representative Peterson's bill. Then we are going to have a report, the early learning study. Then we will have Representative Downey's bill. So we will try to get through all of that. Representative Nornes, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move House File 3471 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the Early Childhood Finance and Policy Omnibus Bill.
Thank you for moving your bill.
Today is Education Day. It's early childhood here. I've got higher ed upstairs, and later tonight, K-12 policy.
Yes.
I don't
a big day.
Can fit myself into your finance committee there, Representative Brown. So, we'll try to be as brief as possible here tonight. This bill deals with the development of a statewide report card. And it directs the State Advisory Council on Early Childhood to recommend what should be included in a statewide report card. The report card will measure the state's progress toward the goal of having all children ready for kindergarten by 2020. A report card will help policymakers to identify where the early childhood system is working and where it isn't. And in the 14 years I've served in this committee, that's a question we keep asking. This information will enable legislators to make better informed decisions about both funding and policy. The Council has already done some preliminary work in that area, and we'll see that later. And we want to build on that. There's no cost to the state, and that's important. The early childhood funders have agreed to provide the funds needed to carry out this work.
Thank you. Do you have an amendment?
Oh, I do have an amendment.
Representative Nornes?
I don't have it in front of me, though.
It is the H3471A1.
Probably upstairs.
I think let's see if we can get you one.
Oh, here it is. The A1 amendment?
Yes. Would you like to move it?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Representative Nornes moves the A1 amendment. Is there any discussion?
Oh, thank you.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Okay.
Okay, the amendment is adopted. Thank you. I understand you have a testifier with you. And we have to the testifier, if you'd like to introduce yourself, welcome to the committee. Introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Thank you so much for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Denise Mayat, and I'm the Executive Director of the Sheltering Arms Foundation, which is a small foundation that funds early childhood and after-school programs statewide. We're one of the eight foundations that make up the coalition that you heard about earlier, and we're very excited about the implications of this work and the possibility of working in partnership with you. About 7 years ago, our foundation realized that in addition to funding quality early childhood efforts, there was really a role for us to play in policy work on behalf of young children. And we also realized that because of our size, we knew we couldn't do this alone, but we needed to look for opportunities to partner with others to see improvement in the lives of young children and their families. And we've worked with a lot of partners since then, including the Early Childhood Legislative Caucus, who we supported some years ago to present early childhood legislative hearings across the state. And we also do an annual children's legislative briefing with the Council of Nonprofits that a number of you here have presented at, and we thank you for that. We've been a partner for quite a few years with Ready for K and the statewide build initiative that Todd was talking about, and I really feel that the set of outcomes and indicators of childhood health and well-being is a precursor to this report card that we're talking about here today. This is not something new. This is something that's been in process for some time and has really been needed by our state. For our coalition of funders, it's a critical accountability measure for the state. We believe that one of the best ways to achieve the goal of getting all of the state's children ready for school by 2020 is to have some kind of consistent measuring tool to periodically gauge how we're making progress towards the goal. Our recommendation and the support of this proposal isn't tied to specifics at this point. Those are to be worked out. But we're looking forward very much to hearing what the resulting recommendations on this are going to be from the State Advisory Council on Early Childhood. We believe this measure will help to inform all of your decisions on this critical issue and ensure that limited state resources are directed in the best ways. And some very good news I bring is that we're not coming to the table empty-handed. Our coalition intends to commit financial resources to this effort to help finalize the great work that's already being done by the Early Childhood Advisory Council, so that together we can fashion it into a useful, ongoing progress measuring tool for the state. Thank you so much for allowing me a chance to speak, and I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Great. Thank you. I know that this week we had a presentation at the Governor's Advisory Council about the legislation.
Yes.
As proposed, I think they were very receptive to it. I think that's, you know, part of it, obviously, is we want them to be receptive, but it fits well within their responsibilities, and that's really what Representative Nornes's bill is doing, is asking the council to pick up the responsibilities doing the scorecard. There are several subcommittees on that council right now, and so it would fit well within their jurisdictions. Thank you also for the work that you've done. I do remember way back when with the Early Childhood Caucus, you were kind of the first one to the Sheltering Arms Foundation and you to step up and provide some funding, which was new at that time. Now there are more of those around these days. Members, any questions about this piece of legislation?
Just one.
Representative Hamilton.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I believe the motion was to hold this over, right, for possible inclusion.
Yes.
And the question that we have is, because this is making modifications to the duties of the council, should this not go through state and local government as outlined in the rules, in the House rules?
Okay, my understanding in consulting with staff is that because it's being rolled into an omnibus bill, that is not required to go through, because if the bills are traveling independently, they would need to, but if they're rolled in, they are not. We can look, we can double check, but that's our understanding.
Okay. Thank you, Madam.
Yeah. Thank you. Good point, though. We want to make sure we're following the process, so we hopefully we can get these bills through. Any questions? Okay. And Representative Nornes, any closing comments?
Only a brief comment that I think it's the only bill I've had that's had 15 co-authors.
Yes, I was going to say since.
And counting.
Since you authored it and since it first came out, there's been an addition of a large number of authors, which shows, and bipartisan, so a good, strong set of authors, which is great. Would you like to renew your motion?
Yes, I would. Renew my motion that House File 3471 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion in the Early Childhood Finance and Policy Omnibus Bill.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you. Next, members, we have our next testifier that needs to leave early, so she will be testifying now. Dr. Ephraim, if you'd like to come down. About 5 minutes, and I know you're on a tight timeline as well.
Thank you very much.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. My name is Karen Ephraim. I'm here on behalf of EdWatch. And I appreciate your indulgence, and I will make brief comments about this bill as well as the next two. We are concerned that this bill promotes and further cements into place a system that is based on not correct information, mainly that the constant refrain that 50% of children are not ready for kindergarten. The kindergarten readiness assessment is based on a number of items, both academic and social emotional, that are extremely controversial, that are not easily provable, and the kindergarten readiness assessment itself has not been well validated. So imposing this report card to do that kind of, to further put forth this idea that 50% of children are not ready is problematic. The other concern that we have is that the idea that one needs to be ready for kindergarten based on these standards, whatever they are, doesn't really explain or have validation for how kids will perform in the long run. And it is far more important to make sure that children perform well in school throughout their lives, not just that they are ready for kindergarten by whatever arbitrary standard the state decides. So that is our concern with this bill. With regard to House File 3510, the department, the Commissioner of Early Childhood Education, we feel that although it's well-intentioned, it has several problems as well. One, expanding the size and scope of government. This commissioner is required in Clause B1 to coordinate and consolidate resources and funding and oversee the accountability of all early childhood and child care programs from birth to age 5. That is putting the state in control of every type of program, be it public, private, or religious, and include child care by aunts and grandmothers. 80% of child care programs in the state are private, and it seems to put to rest the idea that things like the QRIS will be voluntary. If everything is going to be controlled by this commissioner, then there really isn't a voluntary component to this. And so that is one concern. The other one is contradictory goals. How, on the one hand, are you going to have this commissioner in charge of all of the things I just mentioned, and then at the same time, quote, ensure parents have a decisive role in the planning, operation, and evaluation of programs, end quote, or respect and be sensitive to family values and cultural heritage when, for instance, the QRIS and a number of other policy provisions of this committee and this legislature plan to use the early childhood indicators of progress, which deal with such controversial issues, regardless of one's opinion, as gender identity, cultural identity, careers, environmentalism, social activism, when these have never been held up for public comment or had legislative approval. That seems extremely contradictory. So we are very concerned about imposing another cabinet-level agency with these broad sweeping powers, especially when they're so contradictory. And then finally, with regard to Representative Slawik's bill, the expansion of the screening of children, that's screening is supposed to be voluntary. There is no mention in this legislation of the fact that A, parents can decline screening, and B, that districts are supposed to be notifying parents that they can decline screening. And screening early, especially on social and emotional issues, which continues to be done in the state without really good legislative authority, is resulting in some really bad outcomes. If you look at the issue of bipolar disease, that the diagnosis and drugging of children as young as two has increased over 4,000% because of early childhood mental health screening, to the point where now the American Psychiatric Association is taking out the designation of childhood bipolar disorder because it has caused so many problems and resulted in so many children being falsely labeled and drugged. So
you can start to wrap up.
That's really all I wanted to say, Madam Chair. I appreciate the indulgence of the committee and just ask that you really contemplate consequences of all of these bills on parental authority and autonomy, on private business, and on expanding the size and scope of government, as well as the resulting costs of all of these things that you're trying to do in a time when there is no money. Thank you.
Okay, next we will have House File 3470. Representative Rosenthal, you ready to come up and chair? And I will go down.
Representative Slawik, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that House File 3470 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Early Childhood Finance and Policy Omnibus Bill.
Okay. Representative Slawik, would you like to move your amendment?
Yes. I have amendment, the A1 amendment, just to get the bill in the shape that I would like it.
Does everyone have the amendment? All those, any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Slawik.
Thank you. Members, appreciate you hearing this bill today. I also have a testifier with me from United Way. This bill directly comes from the work of the funders. If you look on their 10-year vision, you can see the part about expanding assessments is on there. When you think of overall the place that assessments play in little kids, it's really very important. First is the screening part, and we know that the state already does that. We provide incentives at 3, 4, and 5 for school districts to screen kids. We'd like to see that moved more towards 3 potentially, and then expanding the assessments. So really, when you're assessing kids when they're 5, but perhaps again 4, this would all be determined by the Governor's Council Subcommittee, that you can then see the appropriate interventions to help kids move towards school readiness, particularly with that goal in mind of getting 100% of kids ready by 2020. This bill asks the Governor's Council to make recommendations on how to screen and assess more children earlier in order to provide increased earlier intervention, as I mentioned, so more kids can get ready for kindergarten. We are hoping that the Council will look at how programs and providers can intervene sooner so parents can get their kids the services they need to be healthy and successful in school. And it's proven, members, that by having those interventions, more kids are ready, whether it's from a health standpoint of things like immunizations or from an academic standpoint, all those different types of things. The bill outlines what things the Council would consider while formulating the recommendations. I have to tell you, as a member of the Governor's Council, I was there presenting this bill and talking to them about that. There are many experts that serve on the Governor's Council, people that are from the K-12 system, basically, and know this well, or I should say the E-12 system. So they ultimately would have a subcommittee that would make these types of recommendations, but some of the things they would look at, if there are age-appropriate and culturally sensitive assessment tools for 3, 4, and 5-year-olds, the possibility of incentives for parents and providers to screen and assess younger. Again, what's the incentives for both the school district and for parents? How assessment and screening data will be collected and shared. That's a big one. What we find is there's a lot of different assessments out there right now. We actually have a survey. If you're familiar, I think most of the members know what TIES is, and TIES, the Early Childhood Caucus, asked them to do a survey about what kind of assessments are currently happening in the school districts. So you wonder, I think it's up for grabs what the final decision is, but if we say that 4 different types of assessments are allowed, or these types, or, you know, it may not be, the committee would decide this, but mandating one assessment as much as maybe some different ones that would have results that we could tell if kids are moving towards more school readiness. Some of the recommendations would be potentially how to monitor progress towards 50% of 3-year-olds being screened and 50% of 5-year-olds assessed by 2015, and 100% of 3-year-olds screened and 100% of 5-year-olds assessed by 2020. And again, using the TIES survey information to start to gather that. As I mentioned, many of the programs use assessment already. We heard when our committee went to Bloomington about some of, they have a very strong assessment program. And we're really wanting all programs and providers who care for young children to know the importance of assessment for their own practice. What's exciting for us, and we think that we appreciate you bringing the idea to us, as well as the funders do bring money with them, as mentioned. And so for helping us figure out how to do this, helping the Governor's Council, it's important. We did also, members, have a meeting with Commissioner Segrin and Assistant Commissioner Karen Klinzig. I don't know if either of them are here. I know there's some department folks here. They were very interested and supportive. Of course, Commissioner Segrin reminded us, and we know from all of you who serve on K-12, how complicated assessment is. This would not be a quick nor easy process. I suspect this would be really something that this council subcommittee would have to struggle with on how to best do this. And also, of course, look at best practices in other states and evidence and so forth. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'd like to have the testifier present.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Could you state your name for the record, please?
Frank Forsberg with Greater Twin Cities United Way. And thank you for the opportunity. I'll just make a couple of brief comments building on the comments you just heard. One element that we care deeply about and want to recognize is that currently there's an awful lot of child care and preschool being provided in our state. and it's being mostly paid for by parents, and they're doing a great job caring for and supporting their children. But what we think they're missing in many cases is good quality information coming back to them through perhaps a variety of different sources, but in particular through their care providers. And the evidence that we've seen through our United Way funding and programming that we support is such that says early identification of issues that might be challenging young kids or preventing them from succeeding at an early age, identifying those issues early and addressing them early, both with their parents' support but also at the site that they may be at during the course of the day, does make a very powerful and profound difference. And so a really big part that was mentioned is that we want to identify issues early, get that information into the hands of the parents so that they, again, both at home as well as in their site selection of child care or preschool, can move their children along as well as they can and help those young kids be fully ready for kindergarten when they hit age 5. Currently in our state, we do make a commitment to survey or to assess 10% of 5-year-olds. We think that is terrific. We use the work sampling method here, and I think we get good data on that, but we'd certainly like to see that expanded significantly, both, again, so parents have better data, schools have better data, and then I think also as policymakers, we could make more informed decisions about where our resources are spent. So these are very important topics for us, again, thinking that it would benefit our parents as well as policymakers. The final point I'd like to offer and make is that at United Way, we've had a long tradition of providing funding for very high-quality child care and preschool programs that disproportionately serve very low-income and challenged young children in our community. And we're using those sites to test our ability to screen and identify issues that might be challenging young kids. And so I want to offer that up as part of the solution, that you can use the successes that we're demonstrating and the learnings that we're demonstrating with a sample size of 30 or 35 different child care centers. So we're happy to share that information as we go, and think that can provide a good way forward. So thank you, sir.
Thank you for all your hard work.
Yep, appreciate it.
Any questions from members? Representative Slawick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to take just a moment and thank United Way, especially, and Mr. Forsberg. They've done a lot of work with us, and also they provide the funding for our staff for the Early Childhood Caucus, Lisa Venable, who's here today. And they believed in the bipartisan bicameral model long before it was popular over here at the legislature. So we very much appreciate that. Members, I think this is really an important piece of legislation, and just to say, this brings us to the council. The council will shape it. There will be a lot of room for public input, as well as people to potentially join on a subcommittee. So anybody in the audience that might be interested, or members if you're interested, I think that this is very much open to input at this point. Mm-hmm. And then with that, Mr. Chair, I renew my motion that House File 3470 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus.
As amended.
Early childhood finance and
as amended
be laid over possible inclusion as amended in the early childhood finance and policy omnibus bill.
So moved.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, members, we will have House File 3510, which is a Peterson bill. Welcome to the committee, Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I would move that House File 3510 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Early Childhood Finance and Policy Omnibus Bill. And I have an amendment.
Thank you. Also, I just have to thank Representative Rosenthal for chairing, so thank you for doing that. I know you're juggling a couple committees here, so appreciate that. Your amendment is what's
A1.
The A1 amendment. Would you like to move your amendment?
I would like to move the amendment, and then I'd like to amend my amendment.
Okay. Representative Peterson?
This has gone through many iterations here as we try to determine what's the correct terminology. The amendment to the amendment would be to delete line 1.3 and 1.4.
So, Representative Peterson, this is an oral amendment?
This is an oral amendment.
Okay. Okay. Let us, okay.
Like and I'm making that amendment because we decided or determined that we should leave the term commissioner because it has a different connotation than director. And for the time being, at least, we'd like to leave the original language in the bill, which is commissioner. And so we delete those two lines and leave as is.
So delete lines 1.3, lines 1.4.
And so the original language would be commissioner.
Does everybody understand the amendment?
Okay.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Opposed? The amendment passes.
And then the amendment itself deals with the issue of department and office. And this might relieve the previous speaker a bit because it's not going to be a new department. After much discussion and feedback, we felt that the idea or the concept that goes with department just seems to be another big agency, and that was not the intent. So we're going back to the idea of an office and redesign and restructuring within the original folks who were there, and redesign is the word of the day within government right now. And so we're going back to the word of office. And the rest of these amendments deal just with the necessary places that need to be changed to accommodate that.
Okay. Thank you. Is there any discussion? Okay, all those in favor of the A1 amendment say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The A1 amendment is adopted. Representative Peterson, would you like to talk about your bill?
Yes, and I'm very excited to talk about this bill. I think it's just one of the most necessary components of our vision for the future. And you should have in your packet that very complex picture of all of the departments and all, well, the one with all of the arrows and, you know, it shows just how complex and fragmented the current system is. And it's very hard to delineate right now. I think if you were in the Department of Ed, if you were a parent trying to delineate the Department of Ed, Health and Human Services, probably public health, the rest of those, and it would be very difficult. And so take a good look at that because that is part of the reason that we're establishing this Office of Early Childhood Care and Education. And this is a bill of the Early Education Caucus. And as you know, that is a caucus with bipartisan support from House and Senate. In fact, Senator Jeff Michel is presenting the office bill in the Senate. And, you know, we have a goal, and I think it's a very worthy goal. It's to build a strong, integrated infrastructure promoting consistency in regulations and policies, revamping technology systems to improve the quality and efficiency of services, consolidating waiting lists, and expanding access to child care for families, and elevating the prominence of the early education and care field. I think those are all worthy goals that we seek by establishing this office. And this office creates this bill creates an office with a cabinet level commissioner to oversee all programs and funds related to early childhood care and education. It would combine duties and responsibility for the departments of education, human services, and health in one place. And the Office of Early Education would focus on creating opportunities for Minnesota's youngest children to develop and to learn to their fullest potential. By developing an effective early education system with high standards for programs and professionals, supports to meet these standards, accountability, and community engagement, an office would create a seamless system for early childhood. And due to the fact that early childhood is a complex system to navigate, where both public and private programs, as well as where parents care for their children, Minnesota would benefit greatly from having better state coordination and continuity of care. At least 23 other states have an office or department dedicated to early learning and child development. And actually, yesterday, I had an intern just begin. I said, see what you can find out about early childhood. Well, when he started, I have reports just starting. He started to pull them all up. And they all have really the same concept, the same goals as we've talked about. And most of them have been in place any place from 3 to 5 years. They don't have all of the results yet, but they're all very pleased with what has happened in those particular places where they've established an office or a department. They all look a little bit different, but they all try to achieve the same goal. And most of the states have told us an office has greatly elevated early learning to the place where it should be, to the status that it should have within state government. And some of the successes are, and just I've enumerated some of them before, it's a single place to go if you have an issue. Administrative cost savings allow more funds available for programs. Cuts down on the overhead, so no duplicating efforts. Forms are similar, making it easier for parents. And the transition between programs into school have become easier because they have the same people working on the system from the state level. And there are some examples of where coordination is needed in Minnesota. Child care is often not seen as early learning and more than education. And they think it's education, getting children ready for kindergarten. And the more that child care community can assist the education community in understanding that child development and importance of play and experiential learning, the more our school readiness and preschool programs will effectively teach young children. So just let me reiterate very quickly the goals of having an office. It will enable the departments and the array of early childhood programs to work together more efficiently. It will create better accountability across the programs. It will be an effective clearinghouse for effective, up-to-date, accessible information on early childhood care and education for all stakeholders. It will enhance the ability of early ed programs to deliver high-quality services by streamlining administrative requirements, providing educational opportunities, and supporting efficient and effective business practices in state government. It will build on the strengths of the current system, minimize weaknesses, maximize resources, provide timely and comprehensive information to the governor and the legislature for cohesive decision making. And now we have testimony from Karen Kelly Arula in the Minneapolis Foundation, and we're very pleased that she can be here today. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Peterson. And my name is Karen Kelly Arawola.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. And I am the Vice President of Community Philanthropy at the Minneapolis Foundation. Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to wrap up our testimony on the funder's recommendations today. We started out earlier talking about the baseball analogy, and I guess that it, as I think about the Office of Early Care and Education, I really think about a team that has to have a manager or a coach. Someone is calling the plays. And really the vision of the funders with this office is to have that one centralized place that really has oversight and accountability for the various elements of the early care and education system. You've heard us talk about the importance of leadership. You heard us talk about the importance of accountability via the report card. You heard us talk about expanding the quality rating system and also expanding screening and assessment. The question that all of those great ideas begs is, who will provide oversight for all of those elements of this framework, and who will ultimately be held accountable? for the decisions that get made in terms of funding, financing, and other things that will really direct early childhood in the state. And as the funders did our work, we really came to the conclusion, looking at best practices from around the country, but also just based on our own experiences of working here in Minnesota. We review multiple proposals. We want to pick up the phone and call someone in state government. It does require a bit of a pause to think about who do I call in which department, because there are these resources spread across the state. There are great resources spread across the state, excellent staff, and really important programs that will help us to achieve the goal of all kids being ready for kindergarten by 2020. But as Representative Peterson pointed out, this chart that we sometimes call the spaghetti chart really shows the complexity of the system here in Minnesota. And there is an urgency to moving towards this goal of all children being ready by 2020. And in order to achieve that very ambitious goal, but nonetheless a goal that we believe is achievable, we really need everyone rowing in the same direction, and we need someone who's managing the team and to really help us keep the eye on that goal and making sure that we're making the best use of all of the resources. Our interest in supporting this bill is really about wanting to see a higher degree of coordination, a higher degree of consolidation. So, in fact, we believe saving money by putting these various pieces together in one place and really streamlining not only dollars but also strategies so that we're really clear about how we really achieve this goal in some very tangible ways. So we're very excited about this bill as part of the overall framework for moving us towards that goal of 2020 and all children being ready by 2020, and look forward to doing our part to making that goal a reality.
Great. We have a question, Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have two. And one of the first one, Representative Peterson, I know that NAMI Minnesota was contacting you and wanted to make sure that Children's Mental Health Services, since you've got child protection in here and so forth, does not get into this office. They wanted to be in health care and in Department of Health and Human Services. And so I know they asked the question, but I didn't ever get copied on the answer. So that's my first question.
Representative Peterson?
Ms. Chair and Representative Greiling, I actually did talk to Sue. I always have trouble with her name.
Aberholden.
Aberholden. And she just wants to assure that grant program, you know, stays in place. She doesn't want to lose it. She was afraid that we were going to shift all these programs all over, and her programs would got lost in that whole process. We did move her programs into this particular office because it's under the early childhood. I think under their programs, it seems to make sense to me when we're doing assessments and we're looking at whether children are ready for school, we're looking at all the pieces that go into determining a child's readiness, that mental health would be part of that department. And so it's there. And she was comfortable as long as we don't dissolve the program and we don't lose it somewhere. Her concern is just that it's there someplace, and I assured her that it would be there, because I think that's a very important component of what we do with young children.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I know that you would, and that wasn't quite how I heard the question, so I'll check with her again. And I'm sure she wouldn't want it to be dissolved, but I also heard that she didn't want it to be away from children's mental health, which is more health care related. So I'll check. But and then my second question, Madam Chair, is regarding, it seems to me that this, while you're calling it an office, seems to be more like a board of education for early childhood. And then you have the governor appointing the commissioner. The board of education, I wish we had one again, and I strongly support having one again for education, has had problems ever since they changed from, in fact, as a result of all the problems, they got abolished altogether. But the problems came about as soon as Governor Perpich changed it so that he got to appoint the commissioner instead of the board getting to pick the commissioner. That immediately politicized the whole thing. It was like the governor's thing, and instead of belonging to the whole legislature and belonging to the public and being able to be independent on behalf of students. And I'm wondering why you picked the governor appointing rather than the board appointing, and if other states do that differently.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative. In most states, it is the governor who, at least I've seen, as the governor is in charge of these programs. He is and does appoint the commissioner, at least the ones that I had looked at yesterday. But again, it has to be ratified by the Senate. So the legislature does have a piece in here. If they don't like the person, they can say no, and I think that's true. It's not always used, but it's in this it's in the bill. And so we do have a chance to weigh in if we decide we don't like the particular person, we don't think they're capable. Again, you know, and I'm also going to go back to the mental health. We did add that, and you know, I think it's important to be there, but we should have more discussion on that. If she wants to leave it, you know, with the mental, with the other area, with all of the mental health areas, you know, that's a possibility. But right now, it seems to me she would want it here. But we're open to that. Mm-hmm. That can easily be, you know, amended if she thinks it's more effective there.
Representative Greiling, follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I don't think it is a great assurance that the Senate confirms. You know, we're over here in the House, and the Senate almost always confirms. And if they do confirm and then find out there's trouble later, it's, you know, there's a great upheaval. We all remember, or some of us remember, Commissioner Yeki and all the problems with that being politicized, and, you know, very hard to undo if a commissioner wants they're there. So I wonder if you do know of any other states that you said most of them have the governor, but I mm-hmm. would urge you to take a look at having a different model. I think that dynamic does, I don't think we want to politicize. We've been so careful not to politicize early childhood and have it be mm-hmm. Senate and House and Republicans and Democrats, and we all know the governor is one party or the other. And I think if you have overlapping terms on a board and then they select the leader who is accountable to the legislature in addition to being accountable to the governor, that that's a better dynamic for education.
Madam
Chair Peterson.
And Representative Greiling, which, you know, as I'm thinking through, which board are you talking about? A board that will be a board of education that will be established? What board are you talking about?
Representative Greiling, we're going to have to wrap up. We still have another question and a couple.
Madam Chair, Representative Peterson and I can talk to you about this later, but okay. I'm thinking this looks like a board.
Oh, okay. Madam Chair, we can discuss this later. This is always a work in progress, I've decided, since last year as we work through the early childhood learning, you know, the office. It is, we've changed many things. We revamp, we reprocess. It's a framework, and the pieces inside can be certainly modified as we go along, and I'm sure there will be amendments to this as we go along. But for right now, this is where we're at. So I would renew.
We have another question. Representative,
we have one other question.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. And similar to that same line of thinking, my thought process is this should probably fall underneath the commissioner or the deputy commissioner or the people that report directly to them or the people that report directly to the people that report directly to the deputy commissioner or the commissioner. My line of thinking is that somebody should already be doing this. And, you know, you look at this and it is very confusing. And so maybe we should be making reforms to simplify that or ask somebody to step up and do this that are already in the system. Versus creating a whole nother position. And I guess my question would be, is there something in the bill here that would make them report back to us, back to the committee, on whether or not this new position is actually effective?
Representative Hamilton, I just want to comment on the first part of your question. Is next, we are having the early learning study that starts to look at the current system and how you would merge them together. I will just say on national conferences and panels and things that I've been on, it really came down to almost, they use the term cracking heads, you know, departments need to work together. So if you can get that to happen, that's really the goal here. And it seems the most effective way is through an office, but there are all kinds of models out there. Representative Peterson, to Representative Hannibal's question about
Chair Slawick, Representative Hamilton. Yes, there is a process in the bill for reporting back to the legislature. And I think that is important. We want to know how this is going. And you know, this is, I've been going to these committee meetings where they talk about redesign of government. There are some task forces even within the House and the Senate together talking about this. And this is a results-oriented redesign of what's going on with the different departments and creating a different way of operating and putting early childhood on the same status as some of the other departments. And I think that's essential if we're really going to do the job for young children.
Thank you. Would you like to renew your motion?
Yes, Madam Chair, I would renew my motion that House File 3510 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion in the Early Childhood Finance and Policy Omnibus Bill.
Thank you very much. And I also do want to say thank you to the Minneapolis Foundation for being here and for your leadership and for believing in the process. It really helps us when we have these public-private partnerships. As you know, it can be kind of a difficult place over here, and I think having you work with us on this has been very helpful. So,
thank you, Madam Chair. We look forward to working with you.
Thank you. We will have two things left. I know Representative Downey's in another committee. He will be last. Hopefully he'll be here in about 10 minutes. We have the early learning study. We'd like to ask Elizabeth Rowe and Karen Carlson to come down and talk about that. If you could also talk about the genesis of where this came from. I know it came from legislation. I think you're probably going to cover that, right? And then how far you've come on that. So welcome to, here we have the department. See, it's the precursor of the office, working together side by side. So good to see this. Welcome to the committee. Who would like to start?
Could be the precursor or the successor. I think we did this.
Maybe.
Elizabeth will start.
Okay. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Elizabeth Rowe. I'm a manager in the Child Care Assistance Program at the Department of Human Services, and along with Karen Carlson from MDE, we'll be walking through the presentation of the Early Learning Study. The 2009 legislature directed DHS in conjunction with MDE to study how to transfer the child care programs to the Minnesota Department of Education. The legislature also directed the departments to study how to determine, to create an early learning system with one set of common standards. The legislation is found on page 29 of the study, Appendix A. The child care programs are identified there as the Basic Sliding Fee Program, the MFIP Child Care Assistance Program, and Child Development Grants. The language clearly states that the focus is to look at moving the child care programs from DHS to MDE. MDE and DHS do share a policy focus on children ages birth through kindergarten. The departments collaborate in support of the state's goals that all children are school ready by 2020. Areas of collaboration include the Early Childhood Advisory Council, the QRIS pilot, the Part C Advisory Committee, and the Professional Development Advisory Committee. There's some additional examples on page 2 of the report. The next section of the study addresses the Department of Human Services, and this presentation will particularly focus on three pieces of that: how DHS is structured and how that structure supports accomplishment of child care functions, how the functions are financed, and how the functions that occur outside the child care teams might be transitioned to MDE. An understanding of these three areas would be necessary in planning an effective transition of programs from one agency to another. Some activities occur within the child care teams. Examples of that are implementation of new initiatives, support of efforts to improve quality, research efforts, policy analysis, and technical assistance to counties and child development services grantees. There are other activities that need to occur that occur outside the child care teams. Examples of that include financial operations, communications, constituent contacts, and grant management. How these activities are paid for varies by function and the location of the function. DHS recently implemented the Minnesota Electronic Child Care System, or MEC Squared, which provides automated support for child care assistance case management at the county level. It's part of the MAXA system, which supports multiple programs, including cash assistance and food support. It's a system under which the state makes the payments to providers and parents, and it interfaces with the child support and licensing systems. Child care assistance and child development services activities are paid for administratively with federal child care and development fund dollars, also known as CCDF. CCDF caps administrative spending at 5% of total funds. In federal fiscal year 10, DHS budgeted $3.3 million for administration, which is approximately 3% of the allocation. There's three general areas that that pays for. One is the child care staff and administration. Another is child care licensing costs. And then lastly, indirect costs. And then funds within the administrative cap that are not spent on administration are spent on direct services or on quality. The study assumes that all the staff who are fully funded with CCDF dollars would follow the functions to MDE if the legislature directed that transfer of programs. So the next two slides and much of the report address some of the vital functions that are managed outside the child care teams and therefore are not assumed to move, or the staff are not assumed to move. Those functions where the staff are not moving would require some detailed transition planning. There's some examples on these next two slides, but it's not intended to be a comprehensive list, and there's a chart on pages 11 to 17 of the report that goes into more detail. An example that would need to be planned for is that the child care payments are made by the state, child care assistance payments are made by the state to providers and parents. And MDE does not currently make client-based payments at the magnitude that occurs at DHS. So significant training and planning for MDE staff would need to occur to make that happen. Another area is fiscal notes and forecasts. The CCAP and MFIP, Minnesota Family Investment Program, forecast and fiscal notes are intertwined both at a policy level and at a federal funding level. And so a plan would need to be developed for coordinating those across agencies. The operation of MEC Squared, the electronic system, would require a plan for ongoing maintenance, operation, updates, and access. And that includes both the case management part of the system and the data warehouse where data is stored. And then lastly, the agencies would need to develop a plan for maintaining case reviews and program integrity. And I say lastly, that's the last of the examples here, but it's certainly not the last of the functions that would need to be planned for. And now I will turn it over to Ms. Carlson.
You're welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for letting us talk about this study. When MDE was doing their piece, they thought we looked at what we're calling core functions of executive agencies, and they sort of fell into two groups: those that could be easily generalized, where you have departments may have different, where you have departments may have different interests, different constituents, different programs, but basically the skill set for.
I think you might be in the wrong committee, Representative Huntley.
Thanks. Came in.
Thanks for stopping by.
These functions can be more easily transferred than some of the other functions because they kind of rely on a general skill set of people working in departments. So if you see slide 10, Those would include public information, technical assistance, policy analysis, research and evaluation, contract and grant management, and federal reporting. We're not saying this would be a slam dunk to transfer child care, all of those things, but they would be more easily transferred than some of the other things I'm going to talk about. The more difficult things to transfer would be on slide 11. We've identified relationships with local units of government. As you know, DHS primarily works with counties, and we work through school districts. So we both, however, do work, I would say, equally with nonprofits through contracts and grants and that kind of system. So that might be in the generalized examples. But the more difficult things would be you would have the Department of Education needing to build relationships with county directors, county supervisors, establish vehicles of communication with them, attend county-driven meetings, build relationships with county human services advocates, and what you would expect if you took on a whole new constituency. So that would need kind of more careful attention than some of the other things. The program development and implementation would be would take some time to completely transfer. There would be things that would include, I see that including things like developing a constituent process for appeals. We at MDE currently we hear special ed appeals. DHS hears appeals on their child care assistance program. We would have to figure out how to either incorporate that content of appeals into an appeal system that was set up for special ed, or develop a new constituent appeals process, or for a while in when we were in Children, Families, and Learning, which we reviewed our experiences in there, and I think we have a little, sometimes we have different retrospective thing, glimpses, but we did also contract back with DHS for some things that that Children, Families, and Learning had to do. So there's always interagency agreements and those kinds of mechanisms that we can do. The forecasting is a dicey little area. To forecast child care assistance, you have to intertwine with the forecasts of the MFIP program and other assistance programs. And so that's big business in DHS. That's, we forecast education expenditures, which one could say one could develop the skill set to do the other. But we would, regardless, even if the child care programs came over to the Department of Education, we'd have to have process by which we still are involved with DHS to do any adequate forecasting at all. I mean, they just have to be intertwined back to those programs. Again, it can be done. It was done. But it's more difficult than some of the other things. And then I think Elizabeth, talked about the MEC squared, the computer system. We don't make payments to individual providers like DHS does, and so that would be another interesting challenge. And so that's really how we viewed this. I mean, our job was to tell you how to effectively transfer, not if to effectively transfer. And so we looked through the lens of these functions and determined the challenges as best we could at this point, reviewed our experiences in the Department of Children, Families, and Learning, and put together this sort of roadmap if you choose to go this direction.
Well, thank you. Members, are there any questions? I think it's really interesting. It makes me almost wonder if there was a way to combine at the top sort of administration, but boy, those underneath the forecasting and some of the very complexities of child care assistance that are associated with Department of Human Services, and then the unique things of school readiness and so forth being associated with the schools, it does get very complex, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, and so I think it's helpful to us to have this, though, and to be able to start to think about that. And, you know, members, there's going to be an election in the fall and a new governor, and if a new governor wanted to make this a priority and have it you know, maybe they, maybe Representative Peterson, you wouldn't have to introduce your bill next year. It'd just be reality through a new leader. And but they'd have to think through some of this, and or if there's a some other kind of model or way to do it. And look at, and I know Representative Peterson's looking at other states. Anything else? Well, thank you. Okay, members, it's 5:55. We have one bill. The author is not here. And so, Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move that House File 3432 be in front of the committee. And, Madam Chair, what is your desire for this bill? Is it to be laid over for possible inclusion?
Yes.
All right. Then I would add that to my motion.
Okay, Representative Biskins moves that it is House File 3432 be laid over for possible inclusion. Any comments about the bill, Representative Biskins?
Certainly, Madam Chair, I can do that for Representative Downey. Would you mind if I do it here, seeing as I'm kind of like on all my friends around me, Madam Chair?
I think
Chair.
That would be okay.
Well, Madam Chair and members, this simply says, you know, if we go down the road of a quality rating system, which is absolutely within the purview of the legislature, that we shouldn't abdicate in its entirety our purview, and that the inequality rating system should indeed come before the legislature for approval. You know, we want to be very, very careful of, you know, rules, laws, restrictions, ratings, which can lead to or disapprove of support and funding, leave that without the oversight of elected officials, and so that's why this bill is before us.
Any questions, members? Representative Peterson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And actually, we do have legislation around the quality rating system, and that has been passed by the legislature. But you're talking about all of, and that was more of the framework and vision. You're talking about the implementation pieces that would come before the legislature for approval?
Representative Biskins?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Peterson, as I look at part one of section A, the framework would need approval. As I look at part two, it says the plan that is approved by the legislature. So yes, Madam Chair and Representative Peterson, it is a collaborative relationship between the stakeholders and the elected officials that we are seeking here.
Any other questions? Any closing comments, Representative Biskins?
No, thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you. Do you want to renew Madam your motion?
Madam Chair, I'd like to renew my motion that House File 3432 be recommended for consideration in the omnibus early childhood policy and finance bill.
Laid over for possible inclusion?
That is correct.
In the early childhood finance and policy bill. Okay, thank you. Please remind Representative Downey, our committee meets from 4:30 to 6 on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and this was our only Republican bill, so, well, I guess we've got one more coming in Ornas, so we are glad you were here to present us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You are very kind to have kept this on the agenda and allow me to do this for Representative Downey.
You're welcome. And Representative Biskins, since I know you're kind of a process guy, I just wanted to say two things to close out the committee. Targets will be coming out shortly, and so we will be talking about that perhaps next week, we hope. We know we're going through the committee process, as well as we will be meeting the finance deadlines with this bill. We will have the usual process members as before. All our bills are laid in. I will be seeking all of your input. If you have input, please start looking at the bills that have been laid over. And then we will be coming out with the bill. We will seek public feedback, and then we will vote it out of committee by the 29th, right, which is the deadline. So any questions about that, Representative Spence?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. So then the process will be to introduce the bill, discussion, review by the stakeholders, and then wait over till the next committee meeting, at which time amendments would be then entertained. Exactly. Is that correct?
Yes, Representative Spence. Okay. And then pass it out. The process this year, and it does vary a little bit from year to year, because we are between two departments, as we will go to the Finance Committee, and we will split this year. So half of our bill, last year we went to the floor. Members might remember that whole. It's hard to remember from year to year. I know it starts to blur together, but we will split. And our finance half of the bill for education will join Representative Greiling's bill. Our DHS part of our bill will go with Representative Huntley's bill at that point. Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have had discussions with both Chairs Carlson and Solberg, and that is indeed the process that they laid out for
me. And that works in this kind of a year. I think that is the best process. So with that, any questions? The meeting is adjourned.